Join me as we explore the realms of the witch, weird and wild, through storytelling, folklore, and walking the land. Welcome to Witch Country. Episode 5, Wildwood, Wassail, and Witch Hairs. Welcome, friends, to March, and it's the spring equinox month, so something of a bumper podcast episode today, which has proven something of a challenge because I have had a cold for the last few weeks. It's really lingered, and I've been holding off recording and getting ever so close to the end of the month now, so I'm just going to have to go for it, and forgive me, I'll do my best. I've got lots of magic to share, so I'll try and power through. The first piece of news to bring you is that I have launched a Patreon page, as is so popular with many podcasts. So if you would like to head over to patreon.com/witchcountry, there are lots of behind the scenes little videos, especially useful for today's episode. There's videos of Morris dancing and of rabbits and hares. There are also bonus folk tales and fairy tales and options to share your ideas of where you might want me to visit in the future. And your support on Patreon would be absolutely invaluable in helping me take journeys and excursions and adventures in the future. So your support would be hugely appreciated. And the Patreon is there for you to check out whenever you like. There are also free articles and things on there as well. So there's something for everyone, hopefully. So wildwood is our first keyword for the episode, and it also covers news as well, because I have been finalising the cover and layout with my publishers for book number 6, called The Witch and the Wildwood. This book will be available to pre-order from June, and the official release is September of this year, and then Witch Country will be arriving next year. Now, as is the way with publishing books, there's often quite a long gap between when you submit a manuscript and when the book is actually published. So it's been nice to revisit the manuscript and rediscover some of my favourite stories from The Witch and the Wildwood. So in a little bit of an exclusive, I have cherry-picked some of my favourite parts of the book. So this is the introductory paragraph, a fairy tale, and a little bit of folklore as well. The wildwood seems to somehow cradle magic in its branches, swirling mist and hanging vines, crunching forest floors and honeyed sunlight soaking through banks of ferns. Even those of us who live in urban jungles and concrete cities can easily bring to mind the scent of pine needles, earth and moss. That sense of feeling very small amongst centuries-old trees that are taller and older than some cathedral spires. And just as easily brought to mind are a tale or two about the dark woods, first heard in childhood, that have filled these unknown spaces with mythic and mysterious beings that crawl, lurk, and fly through the wild wood. The term wildwood appears in medieval and Renaissance literature, epic poems, ballads, and romantic tales, like Arthurian legends and the writings of Shakespeare. It was popularised as a modern term by ecologist Oliver Rackham to denote Britain's natural tree cover, and is now commonly used for remaining fragments of ancient woodland, uncultivated woods, or forests that have been allowed to grow naturally. One could argue that no wild woods are entirely free from human influence thanks to climate change, and Rackham himself said true wild wood no longer exists in the British Isles. But it is a word still used commonly today, so I'm going to take some liberties and use it abundantly for wild and wooded spaces, both in the real world and in story. Some may see woods as friendly, such as Hundred Acre Wood of Winnie the Pooh and Friends, and woodland glades with friendly creatures. whereas forests might be thought of as more wild and unruly. The Black Forest, Sherwood Forest, the New Forest, with battles fought and children lost. But each wooded space holds tales of myth and magic, witches and wild creatures. What truly makes a wildwood, perhaps, is not the size or even its age, but the stories within. Well, after that little introduction, I better tell you a story, I suppose. So here is a beauty, from the book, and relevant, I think, to the spring season. The Wood Maiden and the Golden Birch Leaves. Once upon a time, there was a girl named Betushka. She lived with her mother in a tumble-down cottage with two goats. They were poor, but they had a happy life. Every day from spring until autumn, Betushka drove the goats to graze in the beautiful birch woods. Her mother would pack some bread and an empty spindle into her bag, and Betushka would spin the flaxen thread while she watched the goats. Betushka sang and danced along her path through the birch wood, and when the goats grazed, she would sit down under a tree. There she twirled her spindle and flax and sang merrily, whilst the goats nibbled on grass amongst the trees. One fine spring day, when Betushka was dancing and singing on her path, suddenly a most beautiful maiden appeared before her. She wore a floating gown of forest green, and a wreath of wild blossoms crowned her golden hair. In a sweet voice, she asked, "Betushka, do you like to dance?" At this, Betushka exclaimed, "Oh, I could dance all day long." "Well, come then, let us dance together," the maiden said. And the maiden called upon the birds sitting in the birch trees to sing their music. Nightingales, larks, goldfinches, thrushes, and mockingbirds sang sweet melodies, and Betushka's heart filled with joy. The maiden danced so beautifully that Betushka couldn't take her eyes from her. She forgot her goats, she forgot her spinning. On and on they danced till evening, when the sun began to set. The music ceased, and Betushka now saw her spindle barely half filled with thread, and she burst into tears, reproaching herself for forgetting her work. The maiden laughed. "Worry not, dear one," she said, twining the flax around a slender birch tree. The spindle hummed and grew thick with thread. By the time the sun had dropped from sight, the maiden disappeared and all the flax was spun. Betushka journeyed home and gave her mother the full spindle. The next day, Betushka arrived singing in the birch wood. The beautiful maiden appeared at noon and smiled at Betushka as she put an arm around her. They whirled around and round. Again, Betushka forgot her tasks. Again, she saw nothing but the maiden and heard nothing but the enchanting birdsong. As the sun was setting, the maiden handed Betushka her bag. She had filled it with something light and told her not to look into it before reaching home. And with these words, she disappeared into the setting sunlight. Betushka started home, but could not resist peeking into the bag. It was full of dry birch leaves. She wept angrily and tossed some of the leaves out of the bag, but stopped. She could not be wasteful, and they would make good bedding for the goats. On arriving home, Betushka confessed the whole story to her mother about the maiden. "That is the wood lady," said her mother. "Wood maidens dance at midday and midnight. You might not have escaped alive, but the wood maidens give rich presents to those who find their favour." Petushka remembered her bag. She opened it once more and gasped. The birch leaves had turned to gold. Plenty for a fine new home and dairy cows, and pretty dresses for the rest of their days. Nothing, however, gave Petushka quite so much delight as dancing with the beautiful maiden. Often she sang in the birch woods, but never again did her beloved wood maiden appear. The folklore of the wood maiden. Wood wives and witch maidens. In Germanic folklore, the wood wives are sometimes described as fairy folk, beautiful tiny beings with pale skin and long flowing gowns who dwell deep in the heart of the ancient forest. In other stories, they bear closer resemblance to haunting or witch-like figures, also called wish wives, moss maidens, wood maidens, and wood women. Like the dryads of ancient Greek myths, their lives were intertwined with the health of the trees. If the trunk of a tree was broken or its bark ripped off, a wood wife may die. Wood wives might be lured to homes around the edges of the forest by smells of baking, and may even approach and request cakes or sneak a meal from bubbling cooking pots. In old Germanic customs, one might, when baking, make a little extra loaf to be left out in the woods for the woodwives. In thanks, she might teach humans herb craft and healing, help with household tasks, or leave wood chips that would turn into gold coins on the condition that their source be kept secret. So that's our first W for today, the wild wood. Our next W is wassail. Let's recap what wassailing is. I'm going to read you a section from an older book of mine called Kitchen Witch, Food, Folklore, and Fairy Tale. Wassailing. Wassail song. Here we come a wassailing among the leaves so green. Here we come a wandering, so fair to be seen. Love and joy come to you, and to you your wassail too, and God bless you and send you a happy new year. Wassail. Is it a warm libation, a ritual, a hearty salutation, a song? Why, it's all of these things. And it's rooted in tradition branching out over a millennium. Bringing merriment and mischief to the dark days of midwinter, the word wassail is drawn from the Anglo-Saxon phrase was hail, which means be well or be in good health. The word as we know it today appears in the poem Beowulf as a salute to warriors. Then, in 1135, Geoffrey of Monmouth told the story of a Saxon princess, Rowena. She presents the British king, Vortigern, with a bowl of spiced wine, saluting him with Was hail, to which he answered, drink hail, and quite taken with her charms, he later marries her. There is no definitive recipe for Was hail, as it varies from county to county, and was often dependent on local ingredients, but you'll usually find plentiful apples involved. The Was hail drink has been made of warm beer, ale or cider, cloves, ginger, nutmeg and sugar, sometimes with bread, cake or sliced apples floating in it, and pulped roasted apples known as lamb's wool. It may also be fortified by wine, brandy, whiskey, rum, or in fact any alcoholic liquid provided by revelers, like many a mystery punch at parties you may have been to. Varied as the ingredients may have been, the mixture would have been sweet, hot and boozy, with one or two warming and healing spices or herbs. Wassail, the drink, is offered to visitors and becomes a social activity when taken around the village in a bowl decorated with evergreen leaves, usually holly and ivy, and garlands of red ribbons. Along with the drink, would be a range of festive customs that might include singing, jokes, and guessing games. The wassailing ritual of blessing trees and singing through the town is done all through Yuletide, depending on areas and traditions. Taking the wassail throughout the local orchards in ritual was intended to ensure an abundant apple harvest, as well as wishing good health to others in the community. It is also meant to scare away any evil spirits that might be lurking in the branches, and in some regions, men fire guns and people bang on pots and pans for the same effect. The toast or cake floating in the mixture is sometimes hung up in the trees as well, as a sort of offering, literally raising a toast, into the boughs of the tree, to feed and thank the trees for giving apples. Wassailers might make rounds of their village and wassail fields, livestock, and even visit beehives to declare wassail to the bees, to assure abundance for the coming year. This ritual of wassail is still prevalent in my home counties of Somerset and Wiltshire, places famous for their apple orchards, including the mythical Orchards of Avalon. So wassailing is popular at wintertime, but I was delighted this spring to find on social media an announcement for a spring wassail for the equinox at the Arundel Apple Orchard. This is in the county of Sussex, and the event would include Morris dancing and wassailing as wonderful rural folk customs, not necessarily witchy, but certainly a little bit magical. I was already planning a visit to Sussex because it is home to some lovely folklore connected to witch hares and also hag tracks, which is a specifically Sussex term for a fairy ring or mushroom circle. So when I found out the wassail was happening as well, this made a perfect excuse to take a trip down to Sussex and Arundel. And first stop was the orchard where the wassail was taking place, and I have a little bit of sound, not particularly good quality, but great fun from the festivities.
Pour some cider on the roots of the tree. There we go. Yay!
No drinking it.
Now we shall wassail the cider.
So that was the jingling bells and cracking sticks of Sompting Village Morris, who also led the wassail, and it was a lovely little moment for the brief moment of sunshine that we had that day. So that's Wildwood and wassail. Now it is time to seek the witch hares. It is a very common folk tale up and down the country of women and witches transforming themselves into hares. And the accompanying story often involves huntsmen in a field. They spot the hare and try and chase her down, but then she disappears through a door or through a cottage garden. And then all of a sudden, at the front door of the cottage appears a woman. Often any injuries that she is exhibiting reflect injuries inflicted upon the hare, and that apparently is reason enough to accuse a woman of being a witch. So in theory, I could go many places to seek hares. Whether or not they're witches or not will be, of course, up for debate. But I was taken by the idea of Sussex as a place to explore witch hares for a few reasons. One, this rather excellent story from The Folklore of Sussex by Jacqueline Simpson, a maven of all things folklore and myth. There is an accent, a countryman accent involved in this story, which I am going to do terrible justice. So please, please forgive me for this story taken out of The Folklore of Sussex by Jacqueline Simpson. My mates and me was resting under a hedge nigh up Waltham, having our dinner, when a hare comes lopping along. That bain't a hare, that an old ooman down under. Speaking of a village where we was lodging. I takes up a stone and I throws it, and it catches that hare. She didn't half holler, letting out a screech just like an old ooman then, and she goes limping away. That night, when she was down in village, old Sary Weaver, what people said could make a cow run dry by looking at her, folks say she were a witch. She comes hobbling over her cottage, and when she sees we, she lets out a screech, same as Hare did, and goes limping off, for all the world as if she were that hare. She were lame in the same leg what the hare was, and she hadn't been before. So basically, from the Wassail, I set off for a walk on the Sussex Downs. And I was intending to take a circular loop walk known as the Hare Loop, which seemed a perfectly appropriate way to maybe spot some hares if I was lucky, and maybe look out for fairy circles or mushroom circles that here in Sussex are known as hag tracks and are said to be indicators that a hag has been riding horses or other animals over the land. So witch hares and hag tracks. It might have been slightly optimistic to think that I might just see them upon a walk, but one has to start somewhere. So I start off as quickly as I can. I'm trying to look at my map and my phone, but the rain is coming down, so they're getting really soggy. I'm walking along the River Arun and it's really muddy. It's sticky mud as well. So I feel like I'm moving really slowly and I'm already starting to get a little bit stressed that it's already about 4:45. I know the sun sets at 6:30. So I've got time, but I'm moving really slowly and it's raining and I'm starting to have my doubts. I think they're creeping in already. But then I cross away from the river and over train tracks and I'm going towards Warning Camp. And the idea is that I'm moving up to Wepham and then do a little loop around. The route of the Hare Loop, I think, is really intended for people driving because there's a kind of parking point in the right there. I have to walk up to Wepham to kind of start the loop. So I haven't even got to the beginning of the loop yet. And then it's raining still and I take a wrong turn. And I end up in this field and it's beautifully lush green and I'm moving up this field uphill. And I get a sense that this would be a really great place for hares to leap around if the sun was out. And then, at the top of the field, past the green grass, there is an old corn field. And there's bits of kind of ragged, broken corn stalks and there's nibbled bits of corn on the floor and it's this perfect colour of hare hide. It's that kind of browny yellow. And I'm just thinking this when there's a flash through the stalks. I'm pretty sure it's a hare. I don't know for sure. But I see a flit and a jump and they run from the cornfield into the trees. I think I've seen a witch hare. Maybe a regular hare, maybe a regular rabbit, but a sighting all the same. And then shortly after this, I reach the top of the field, and there is a giant red sign that says, "Strictly private." It's facing away from me, so I've obviously just walked through a private field, and there's another sign that says this is part of the Angmering estate, so it's a minor trespass here. I didn't mean to, so I do apologise. But then I'm kind of stuck. I make an executive decision to turn around and actually walk back through the field that I'm not supposed to walk through. But then when I come back down the field, it's like 5:30, and I'm thinking, I haven't even made it to the hair loop yet, and I've got a bit lost, and it's wet, and I'm muddy, and I'm cold, and I feel really disappointed, and I'm still quite salty about it now, but I give up, and I walk back along the river, and the sky's kind of cleared now as well, so it's blue sky. But then I make it to the train station, maybe about 6:15, and it's getting dark quickly, and I think if I had been out in the countryside when it was getting this dark, I'd be panicking a bit. So I suppose that's for the best, but I do feel disappointed that I completely failed to walk the hair loop. I'm pleased that I saw what may or may not have been a witch hare. If it wasn't a witch hare, then it was a rabbit, and that's just as nice. And I also saw lots of pheasants and a few buzzards and kites on my journey, so I saw other beautiful animals as well. And the wassail was really special. It's been a mixed day, but I get back on the train and the sun is setting and I think I'm just ready to go home. And I do intend to take some more walks, maybe closer by. If I'm walking from my home and I can go at dawn or dusk, there are fields nearby. There's nothing to stop me finding hares in other places. So I will continue my quest to seek the witch hares. So that brings me to the end of my adventures or misadventures in Sussex. And I hope that you all have a joyful March and April. And you're excited for the clocks changing and the coming of spring. Thank you so much for joining me on this rambling journey today. I will leave you with a lovely little poem by Walter de la Mare about the witch hare. In the black furrow of a field, I saw an old witch hare this night. And she cocked a lissome ear, and she eyed the moon so bright. And she nibbled off the green, and I whispered, "Whisht, witch hare." And like a ghostie o'er the field she fled, and left the moonlight there. Thank you for joining me on the journey today. I hope as we part ways you feel a little enchanted and bewitched, inspired perhaps to walk a new path next time you head out into your own witch country. If you enjoyed this podcast, please do consider rating and reviewing. If you'd like to come and say hello, you can find me on Instagram at thisiswitchcountry. I'd love to hear your ideas, feedback, and suggestions for further adventures into the wilds. Until next time, enjoy your walks in the wilds of the witch country.